Good morning, everybody. Doesn't look like it, but is there anybody who's here for the first time? Welcome. Okay. So, what was that?
The back door. Somebody rang our back door.
Come in. Okay. Grab one of right there. Grab one of these things. Yeah. Okay. So, anyway, good morning. My name is Susan, and welcome to Lion's Roar. I'm one of Lama Jinpa's students, and so I'm going to be giving the talk today. The program's going to be a little different than usual. We have, as I've been pointing out, this meditation text. And in the text are prayers as well as closing prayers, meditation, mantra. Everything's in here. So we don't really need the, we're not going to do opening prayers like we normally do. I want to make sure. You'll see back there also by the prayer books this flyer on a medicine Buddha, sand mandala, and initiation in September, mid-September. The initiation is September 16th. So the talk I'm doing today is going to be on medicine Buddha, just to give us a little bit of background and some prep. The mandala will be constructed, I think, September 12th through 15th. And then we'll have the initiation by Kenshin Rinpoche on the 16th, the morning that that's a Sunday. And then we'll dissolve the mandala. And whoever wants to come, we're going to take it to the river and dump the sand in the river. It's a very traditional.
We're not going to keep it up though?
No, we're not. We're going to take it down that day. Yeah, yeah.
I'd like to see more people look at it.
Well, it'll be up for 4 or 5 days. As they construct it.
So, yeah.
But they just decided not to leave it up this time. Are there people here who come to our meditation sessions or to mindful recovery and yoga and all of that kind of stuff? Yeah, okay, so Lion's Roar has a lot of activities. I mean, we have the Sunday program, obviously, and we have Geshe Law's teachings on Saturday mornings. And I will start Buddhism from the ground up again in the next few weeks or so. It will be, in case you're interested, another approach to studying the Lam Rim, which is the graduated path to enlightenment. Geshe Damcho is teaching that from a very traditional text, the second and fourth Saturday mornings. The Buddhism from the ground up is going to approach the Lam Rim from using a series of meditations that were written by Venerable Thupten Chodron. And they are meditations on the steps to the path of enlightenment. And then we'll have, you know, some readings and stuff as well. But it's going to be another approach to Lam Rim, because Lam Rim is, like, a really important thing. So we thought we'd give it a double whammy so people can get it one way or the other or both, you know, whatever they may like. And since we have all of these programs, we also have a Donna box. Because everything that we do is, you know, we don't charge for anything. Everything is available to enrich your life, to help your practice. And so we exist here and we have programs as a result of your generosity. So please be generous and fill up that little plastic box in the back.
Mention that we do have meditation every morning.
Yeah.
And we have no students from Lion's Roar. We have people from different meditation.
Yeah. So every morning from 7 to 9. Yeah, either Tom or Peter are here. So if you're having a hard time figuring out a way to get meditation worked in your morning because things are kind of hectic at home, this is open for 2 hours plus. It's, you know, then they stay open. So you can always come here. Nice and quiet. Very inspirational. Okay. This mic is driving me nuts, by the way. I just got to tell you.
Which one?
Huh?
Is it in your way?
It's like, I'm afraid I'm going to bump my nuts. No, they can't hear me. Can you hear me now? Can you hear me now? Okay. Okay. All right. Thank you. Yeah, it is better. Okay, so we're going to start the morning. I'm going to give you some background and some history that I got on, have found on Medicine Buddha. Then we'll take a break, and then we'll come back and we'll recite this sadhana together, and we'll learn the mantra. It'll be a good thing to learn. The mantra is short, and it's very easy to memorize, so we'll learn the mantra today, too. And then afterwards, of course, we always have snacks and tea and coffee in the back and more conversation. So everybody's welcome to that. Okay, so Medicine Buddha. I heard a talk on YouTube by Professor Robert Thurman, who is a trusted source, to say the least, in Tibetan Buddhism, on Medicine Buddha. And so that's where I got most of this information. That tanka over there, the very first one on that wall, is Medicine Buddha. You'll see that there is a blue Medicine Buddha in the middle, and it's surrounded by a number of other Buddhas. So there are seven Buddhas. They call the seven brothers gone to bliss. And the eighth Medicine Buddha is Shakyamuni. So there's Medicine Buddha plus seven others, including Shakyamuni, surrounding him. The legend goes that in true Mahayana fashion, there were seven brothers residing in a universe as far away as there are grains of sand in the Ganges, right? I mean, the universe is pretty expansive. It's unlimited. And this was eons and eons and eons ago. And all these brothers became enlightened at the same time. Even Bob Thurman thought that was pretty remarkable. So after they became enlightened, they looked forward and they looked backwards in time because they're Buddhas and they can do that. They are timeless. And they saw our little planet called Jambuvita. Huh? Jambuvipa in Sanskrit, which, according to Dr. Thurman, translates as tolerable. So I thought that, you know, it's perfect. It's great. So they looked forward and they looked backwards in time and they saw this planet called Tolerable. And they saw that Shakyamuni Buddha was going to be born on this planet during troubling times. And they thought it would be a really great idea if they came to this Tolerable planet to inspire Shakyamuni to propagate the Medicine Buddha teachings. So they came and they taught him all the Medicine Buddha teachings, and then he was able to teach us. And of course, he is still teaching us. But that's how Shakyamuni became the eighth Medicine Buddha, as they came here. So, as you can see, Medicine Buddha is blue. And again, I'll ask Dirk. In the Nyingma tradition, Samanda Batra is blue, and Samanda Batra is the Buddha of infinite wisdom.
Samanda Batra is the
primordial. Right, so.
He's the dark.
Right, but he's still blue. So according to.
Anyway,
according to Professor Thurman, the blue of Medicine Buddha may symbolize the wisdom of the perfection of ultimate reality, pulling from Samanda Batra. So the blue light that radiates from Medicine Buddha that we will construct, as we do the sadhana, as we do the visualization, is infinitely healing. Because it is perfect, perfect light, and it is infinitely healing. The color, and it will be referred to as the color of lapis lazuli. And they're beginning to think, I heard this from Professor Thurman and also from Lama Zopa Rinpoche, they're beginning to think that that's a mistranslation, that it should actually be sapphire. Lapis is a really beautiful stone, and it is that color, but it's opaque. Sapphire has many colors, but the really, really deep blue sapphire is not opaque. It is translucent. And so the sapphire light makes more sense in a translation, and we'll probably see that change in the texts as time goes on. But right now in our text is the color of lapis lazuli. And he's called the Buddha medicine guru, king of lapis lazuli, and Lama Zopa Rinpoche is starting to call him medicine guru, king of sapphire light. Anyway, the bowl that Medicine Buddha holds, I think in that one, and definitely in the picture you have here, is filled with healing nectar. In some depictions, it is filled with leaves and with nuts. In his right hand, he is holding an aurora plant, which is considered to be a medicinal plant that will heal anything and everything. But the aurora plant also symbolizes that all of life around us is medicine. Everything is growing symbiotically with us, not just interdependently, but symbiotically. There is a biological, beneficial relationship between all sentient beings and all life forms and all plant forms and all of that. So in nature, there is, according to these teachings, a cure for all illnesses. You know, and there's, you know, they found cures for the darndest things in the darndest places. So I'm not so sure that that isn't really true. You know, we don't know all the plants that are sitting in the Brazilian rainforest. So, but that's the idea, is that this, we exist symbiotically with all of nature. Medicine Buddha's pure land is called Sudarjuna, beautiful to behold. And when we're in the presence of Medicine Buddha, the vision around us changes, or it's supposed to change as part of the transference, the, is that the word I want? The, as part of what happens during the visualization in our imagination, the life around us changes, and everything looks to us like medicine. Because of the blessings of all the Buddhas and the Bodhisattvas and our own very good karma, the plants and everything around us is here to heal us. So it's all a pure land. You'll hear Lama talk about this. Everything is pure, ultimately. This temple is a pure land. Sacramento is a pure land. All of the work that we're doing on the landscaping is to visually represent the pure land that already exists here. So that's part of the Medicine Buddha, well, and probably all the Buddhas. But right here, we're in a pure land. We don't have to reach, you know, we don't have to die to go to a pure land. We live in one. It's all in the vision. So, before Medicine Buddha became enlightened, while he was still a bodhisattva, he made 12 great vows. Some of these vows are vast, and some of these vows are very specific. And they address all sorts of practical problems and all sorts of societal problems. So I'm going to read the 12 great vows, and then we will probably take a break, I think, is where I've got the break. Okay, so I think it's the Buddha Shakyamuni. This is from the Medicine Buddha Sutra. So I think it's Shakyamuni who's speaking, but I'm not sure. He says, Manjushri, when the world-honored medicine Buddha was treading the Bodhisattva path, he solemnly made 12 great vows to grant sentient beings whatever they desired. So the first great vow, he says, I vow that in a future life, when I have attained supreme perfect enlightenment, brilliant rays will shine forth from my body, illuminating infinite, countless, boundless realms. This body will be adorned with the 32 marks of greatness and the 80 auspicious characteristics. Furthermore, I will enable all sentient beings to become just like me. So that's the Bodhisattva's vow, right? Is to bring all sentient beings to full enlightenment. Second great vow. I vow that in a future life, when I have attained supreme enlightenment, my body, inside and out, will radiate far and wide the clarity and flawless purity of lapis lazuli. This body will be adorned with superlative virtues and dwell peacefully in the midst of a web of light more magnificent than the sun or the moon. The light will awaken the minds of all beings dwelling in darkness, enabling them to engage in their pursuits according to their wishes. So this light that is generating fills us totally and awakens us, leads us out of darkness, out of delusion, out of ignorance. The third great vow. I vow that in a future life, when I have attained supreme enlightenment, I will, with infinite wisdom and skillful means, provide all sentient beings with an inexhaustible quantity of goods to meet their material needs. They will never want for anything. That's pretty vast. Fourth great vow. I vow that in a future life, when I have attained supreme enlightenment, I will set all who follow heretical ways upon the path to enlightenment. Likewise, I will set those who follow the Shravaka and Pratyeka Buddha ways onto the Mahayana path. So basically he's saying that everybody who is not, all sentient beings who are not Mahayana Buddhists, who are not practicing in order to become enlightened for the benefit of themselves and all other sentient beings, that's the key piece, that we work to become enlightened so that we can aid and assist all other sentient beings, that he will turn the minds of all other sentient beings to walk that path so that we are all helping each other, right? So everybody's healing each other. It's sort of like, well, anyway, that's my interpretation. So, fifth great vow. I vow that in a future life, when I have attained supreme enlightenment, I will help all the countless sentient beings who cultivate the path of morality in accordance with my Dharma to observe the rules of conduct to perfection in conformity with the three root precepts. Even those guilty of disparaging or violating the precepts will regain their purity upon hearing my name and avoid descending upon the evil paths. So we'll observe the rules of conduct to perfection in conformity with the three root precepts. Who can say what the three root precepts are? We say them almost every Sunday morning. Do not commit. Your own mind, this is the teaching of the Buddha. So those are the three great vows. Do not commit any non-virtuous action. Accumulate virtue and goodness. Subdue your own mind. You know, I mean, that pretty much covers it, right? So those are the three great vows. And even those guilty of disparaging or violating these precepts will regain their purity upon hearing my name and avoid descending upon the evil paths. Sixth great vow. I vow that in a future life, when I have attained supreme enlightenment, sentient beings with imperfect bodies whose senses are deficient, who are ugly, stupid, blind, deaf, mute, crippled, hunchbacked, leprous, insane, or suffering from various other illnesses, will, upon hearing my name, acquire well-formed bodies endowed with intelligence, with all senses intact. They will be free of illness and suffering. Whose name? I'm sorry? King of Lapis Light, medicine guru, King of Lapis Light. Yeah.
The vow was broad and pure my name. So my question was, what's his name?
Oh, yeah, okay. Medicine guru, King of Lapis Light. There we go, yeah. Just trips right off the tongue, right? I think, and I'll talk about this in a little bit, actually on the next vow, I think the mantra counts also. So this is the seventh great vow. I vow that in a future life, when I have attained supreme enlightenment, sentient beings afflicted with various illnesses, this is so sad, with no one to help them, nowhere to turn, no physicians, no medicine, no family, no home, who are destitute and miserable, will, as soon as my name passes through their ears, be relieved of all their illnesses. With mind and body peaceful and contented, they will enjoy home, family, and property in abundance, and eventually realize unsurpassed supreme enlightenment. So when I read this, usually I live in Midtown, and you know, so and anytime you're in town, what do you see? Just open up your eyes. The destitute and miserable, right? The ones who have no home, no family, no medicine. You see them all the time. So usually what I do, has been my practice, is to do the mantra of compassion. Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum. And what this reminds me to do is to say the Medicine Buddha mantra. Because I think that that is also saying the Medicine Buddha's name. And as soon as my name passes through their ears, be relieved of all their illnesses. It's a great thought. It's a fabulous thought. Why not? Anyway, so that's what I thought of when I read this one. Eighth great vow. I vow that in a future life, when I have attained supreme enlightenment, this is going to require a little explanation. Those women who are extremely disgusted with 100 afflictions that befall women and wish to abandon their female form will, upon hearing my name, all be reborn as men. They will be endowed with noble features and eventually realize unsurpassed supreme enlightenment. So actually Lama specifically talked to me about this one. Not surprising, because we had a talk on Tara not too long ago, right? So it says, those women, so it's not all of us, who are extremely disgusted with the 100 afflictions that befall women. Now think about the period of time during which this was probably written. I mean, this was like, you know, at the turn of, it probably wasn't even the common era. When this was written, women die in childbirth all the time back then. Their children, they suffer the death of, the infant mortality rate was probably well over 50%. So they suffered the loss of children over and over and over again. They are under the thumbs of their fathers and then their husbands and then their sons and their brothers. Right, they lose their husband and their sons and their brothers and their fathers are, right there. So the 100 afflictions that befall women, it was not a wonderful life. You know, it's quite different than it is now. And then he says, and wish to abandon their female form. Then it can be, so, not all did. Tara, for instance, as we all know, Tara made a vow to be reborn over and over again in female form. Kuan Yin is female. The Chinese and the Japanese manifestations of Avalokiteshvara are both female form. So there are a lot of female Buddhas, Paulden Lamas now in the other room, but there's a lot of female Buddhas and female Bodhisattvas. So not all wish to be reborn as men. But given the history, the period of time, maybe it wasn't such a bad thing. So anyway, so that's the explanation of that. He was trying to be compassionate, right? This was not sexist. This was compassionate. Ninth great vow. I vow that in a future life, when I have attained supreme enlightenment, I will help all sentient beings escape from the demon's net and free themselves from the bonds of heretical paths. Should they be caught in the thicket of wrong views, I will lead them to correct views, gradually inducing them to cultivate the practices of bodhisattvas and swiftly realize supreme perfect enlightenment. So wrong views would be things like there is no such thing as karma. Wrong views would be things that...
There is a self.
Right, that there is a solid, immutable, inherent self. The whole concept of interdependence and dependent arising does not exist. Those would be wrong views, or some of them anyway. So, Well, yeah, I mean, but that's a wrong view, but that's also in many other religions. Selflessness is pretty specific to Buddhism. Anyway, so what he's saying is that, it's kind of similar, like taking the one of the other vows when he was talking about people on the heretical paths and bringing them to the Mahayana Bodhisattva path. Tenth great vow. I vow that in a future life, when I have attained supreme enlightenment, those sentient beings who are shackled, beaten, imprisoned, condemned to death, or otherwise subjected to countless miseries and humiliations by royal decree, and who are suffering in body and mind from this oppression, need only hear my name to be freed from all these afflictions, thanks to the awesome power of my merits and virtues. So, you know, this makes me think of, you know, the all of the people who are involved in conflicts and wars throughout or imprisoned. I mean, I don't know about other traditions, but I do know in the Buddhist tradition there are a lot of people who are involved in prison activities, who visit nuns and monks and lay people who visit prisons throughout the world to teach the Dharma to the incarcerated, and how incredibly helpful that is. A lot of people have, you know, letter relationships with the men and the women that are in prisons. So only hear my name, be freed from these afflictions. You know, that's their attempt on the path of the Bodhisattva, as promised by Medicine Buddha, to fulfill that vow. 11th great vow. I vow that in a future life, when I have attained supreme enlightenment, if sentient beings who are tormented by hunger and thirst, to the point of creating evil karma in their attempt to survive, should succeed in hearing my name, recite it single-mindedly and hold fast to it, I will first satisfy them with the most exquisite food and drink. Ultimately, it is through the flavor of the Dharma that I will establish them in the realm of peace and happiness. And then the 12th great vow. I vow that in a future life, when I have attained supreme enlightenment, if sentient beings who are utterly destitute, lacking clothes to protect them from mosquitoes and flies, heat and cold,
and are suffering day and night should hear my name, recite it single-mindedly, and hold fast to it, their wishes will be fulfilled. They will immediately receive all manner of exquisite clothing, precious adornments, flower garlands, and incense powder, and will enjoy music and entertainment to their heart's content. Manjushri, these are the 12 sublime vows made by the world-honored Medicine Buddha Lapis Lazuli Radiance Tathagata Arhat, the perfectly enlightened, when he was cultivating the Bodhisattva path. So, yeah, they're pretty immense. The text that we do on a Friday evening, called the Medicine Buddha, the Wish-Fulfilling Jewel, has each one of these Buddhas identified and takes those great vows. And each one of these Buddhas has made these vows. And so in this text, we repeat those vows over and over again. And the interesting thing at the end of each one of the homages and expressions to each one of the eight Buddhas, we say, and this is the part that makes the Medicine Buddha a part of ourselves, is this: when we say, and when we pass away from this life, may we be born from a lotus in that Buddha field, qualities complete. And here's the main piece. Become a vessel for transmitting the teachings of conquerors, such as King of Melodious Sound or whatever Buddha we're talking about, and cause them delight. So the idea is that all of these qualities of Medicine Buddha, all of these vows that the Medicine Buddhas have made, we can hear them, we can learn them, and we can transmit the teachings of the conquerors through our very lives, by doing the mantra, by helping people. So anyway, that's my interpretation of this stuff. Where are they written?
Yeah, where's the source?
Oh, it was from the Medicine Buddha Sutra, which I didn't print out the whole thing. I just printed out the vows. But if you just Google Medicine Buddha Sutra. Oh, you just did. Okay, all right. Yeah. So that's where it is. Right. And it's a fairly lengthy sutra. I think Mahayana sutras tend to be pretty long. Any other questions so far? Yeah.
I think about the... the idea of transformation from female to male, if you wanted to give it a modern interpretation of it, it could be transformation into anything.
I'm sorry, Jan. Can you use the mic? Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you. Okay.
I said when it talks about the eighth one about women being reborn into men, you could just talk about it as transformation.
You could.
You know, and I think that's a more modern interpretation of that. You know?
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, good. And Doug, I think Dana had, no? Okay. Anybody else? Okay. Last week, Lama taught on Medicine Buddha. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Nicole.
The usage of the word conqueror, so I'm understanding that to mean conquerors of...
Delusion
and ego and...
Right.
Right, okay. Right. Wrong view and all that.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, not in a warlike manner. Yeah, right. Last week when Lama taught on Medicine Buddha...
Susan. I'm sorry, I did.
Change your mind.
I did. I have a question that's on a broader case of curiosity We've had Medicine Buddha come here quite frequently to Sacramento to do Sam Mandala and the initiation, and I'm wondering why are we doing this Medicine Buddha all the time, and is it working, and what are we I don't know, are we getting anywhere with this, or I know it sounds really silly, but I just
no, I understand your question. And others join, respond to this as well. I think that we do Medicine Buddha when the decision to do a Medicine Buddha mandala or to do an empowerment is not ours. The monks who are doing the mandala say, we want to do a mandala and we want to do Medicine Buddha mandala. The masters who give us the teachings and the initiations say we're going to do Medicine Buddha. So that's from their, if you want to think of their, I'm thinking the people that I've gotten initiations from has been Chodin Rinpoche. He did it, what was it, a 3-day? It was a long, it was a great, great empowerment. It's fabulous. And Jhana Rinpoche, and now from Khenchen Rinpoche. And that's all been their choices. At least, my feeling is that these masters have knowledge and inspiration from places that I haven't touched yet. And if they say that they're going to do Medicine Buddha because we need Medicine Buddha, then we're going to do. I mean, that's it. I mean, that's their. I think that is their inspiration. That's what we need. That's what the world needs. That's what Sacramento needs. That's what we need in Dona de Garge. Is that kind of? Yeah. So that's. And is it working? That's a real personal question and answer. You have to do the work to see if it's working. I don't think anybody can answer that for anybody else. Yeah. Doug.
In one of the practice books, Lama Zopa says that you have to be basically at the level of a Buddha to understand the effects of it.
Right.
And I guess the other thing is in Buddhism, there's the concept of time is a little different. Like when they talk about it takes thousands of kalpas, it's not a real time. It just means it's a long time or it's beyond time.
Right. But the effects can also, we can have realizations right here and now also. And who knows that we haven't been doing Medicine Buddha practice for kalpas. Maybe we have. I don't know. But we can also have realizations right now. We can wait forever, or we can have them right now. We can have the inspiration and have the view and be open and sensitive enough that we can have the realizations now to some level or another.
No? That's probably more important. Getting at the cause of a problem, not just the problem itself.
Yeah. Eric?
Is it on? I just a real quick comment. I lived in Knoxville for 10 years, and I went to a local.
You lived where?
Knoxville, Tennessee.
Oh, okay.
And I went to a group there called Losol Sheldrum Ling, and I think they're Kadampa. What is it? Karmapas. Whichever lineage of the Karmapa.
That's Kagyu.
Okay. Yeah. And one of the things they kept saying is a lot of the places that they would set up, like the stupas and shrines and stuff, where they thought that they they came to that part of the United States because they said that there was this long history of the Civil War and that there was all this slavery and there was a whole lot of bad karma cruising around out there.
Right.
And that was basically one of their reasons. So, you know, that seemed like a pretty interesting point of view. Why would these guys come out here and start setting these things up around these mountains in Tennessee, you know? And so I have no idea what that's doing, but if you look recently, it seems like there's been a lot of, you know, you start looking at all this stuff with taking down all these old statues and all the conflicts where people are really kind of getting in each other's face. Now, it doesn't sound to me like peacefulness exactly, but there's certainly stuff churning in the South at these times, and a lot of it has to do with that old stuff, so who knows?
Anyway, just a comment. Yeah.
As a parent raising young children, and there's parents here, I don't know if it's related. I feel like all of the prayers and energy and meditation and intentions are going in the same direction, but there is a trend of great desire for peaceful parenting and mindful parenting, and it's all over social media, and this is the life that I'm living in, and it gives me great hope for the future generations to see this narrative, and I don't remember hearing about this when I was being raised.
Yeah. Okay, one more.
I just know that when we're asked to do prayers for people who are sick, sometimes the appropriate prayer isn't necessarily medicine Buddha. Sometimes it's Tara,
right,
overcoming obstacles. So yeah, that was really where my question was kind of going. Like, when do we know what to? But we can get into that later. The real next thing I really need to know is the controversy over the mantra. Is it Benghazi or Benghazi?
Yes.
But we can get
I'll get to that, actually. You know, which mantra you do is a decision of skillful means. You know, sometimes all you can do is offer compassion. That's all you can do. You can't do anything else. Sometimes you can get in there and just, you know, really get some work done, and then you do Tara. So, yeah, it's going to depend on skillful means, I think. That's my, you know.
When you start doing the Tara, get some work done
around here. Oh, yeah, we never get much done around here, yeah. Okay. All right, so let me finish this up, and then we'll take a break, and then we'll come back and do this short sadhana. So last week, Lama taught on Medicine Buddha, and what he talked about a lot was conflict resolution, and that it took, he had three steps or three concepts that were at play. One was emptiness, the understanding that all concepts and emotions and thoughts are really empty of inherent existence. So there was that. And he also taught about connection and interdependence. Now, all of that sounds like Medicine Buddha, you know, so, but he took another spin on it, right? He brought it to our everyday life of conflict resolution, which we all do every day, right? Even within our own selves. If you haven't got conflict with your brother or sister or your boss, you've got conflict with yourself probably every day, right? So we bring emptiness, we bring interdependence, and we bring connection. So that was, you know, his spin, if you will, on one of the ways that Medicine Buddha can work. I think that by invoking Medicine Buddha, we access healing energy to use that to resolve conflict and to resolve that, to be peacemakers, to be further reconciliation. Later on, sometime I think in November, we have a Tibetan doctor who's coming, and so we'll learn a lot more about this then. But it is very true that when one is training to be a practitioner of Tibetan medicine, some sort of a healer, whether they're physicians or acupuncturists or midwives, or whatever the healing profession is that they are training in medicine, in the traditional Tibetan medicine, one of their really, really important trainings is Medicine Buddha. they really do very, very in-depth work in Medicine Buddha, so that they can channel, so that they can merge with Medicine Buddha and have that energy and the strength and that knowledge available to them to help them heal, to help them in their healing practices. By becoming Medicine Buddha, their wisdom is heightened, their skillful means are inexhaustible, and because they can access this huge, boundless well of Medicine Buddha energy and knowledge, they don't burn out. You know, they're not doing this on their own. They're invoking and channeling all of that energy from Medicine Buddha to help them in their healing. So it's a really, really important practice in the cultivation of becoming a practitioner of Tibetan medicine. The visualization section in this short sadhana that we're going to do, we will actually do some merging with Medicine Buddha. This is all in your imagination, all in visualization, until you can make it real. At some point, you make it real. When we're saying the mantra, we're going to visualize Medicine Buddha is radiating out blue light, and that blue light is going to flood into us. And we're going to feel all that dark blue energy, and we will turn blue. I mean, this is all, you know, this is heavy-duty visualization. It's really, really effective. And we're filled with this calm, blissful, healing energy. You can embellish the visualization as you like. Generally, the people that you are fond of or close to are on your right. You make all sentient beings in the universe into human form. And then you put all the ones that you're fond of on your right. And you put all of the ones that you're kind of neutral about in the middle. And all of the sentient beings you have difficulty with on the left, like mosquitoes and, you know, who are now in human form. And you let all that blue light reflect onto them and heal them. And we share all of that light and the blessings with all beings in the universes. So, okay. Let's take a 10-minute break. Is anybody got any questions? We can do questions again later if we want. Okay. We're going to take a 10-minute break. I'll ring the bell or the gong or something. And then we'll come back and do this. So if you haven't got a copy, there's copies on the back table. Okay. Alrighty, so we have here in this vase sand from a previous Medicine Buddha mandala. God, when was that? Yeah, but I'm trying to, it was 2000, it was 2016? Anyway, it was a while ago. We had a mandala, and we left it up for several weeks, as Peter mentioned earlier, or actually several months. And then by the time we got around to doing the dissolution, you know, sweeping it all together and taking it to the river, it was raining like crazy, and we couldn't get to the river. So we put it in the vase, and it's been sitting on the altar ever since. So Patty and Michelle and Lama thought, oh, why don't we give it away? Because we gave a lot of it away then. So we're going to do it again. If you want some of the blessed, this is blessed sand. It's from the old Medicine Buddha mandala. And I've got it on my altar. I carry some around in my car because when I see a dead bird or a dead squirrel or something, I get out and I sprinkle some medicine Buddha sand on them. So anyway, if you want sand, Patty and Michelle are glad to give you some after this and after we do closing prayers and on your way to the back. They do? They got little? Yeah, no, you're going to carry it around in your hand. Okay. All right, let's do the mandala. It's on the bottom of page 2, and also on the bottom of page 3, you'll see the Sanskrit words there. At the top of page 3 is the meaning of the mantra. We won't, when we're going through this, we won't recite that. It's just there for our edification. We will do, I think there's going to be time. It's a little later than I thought. Depending on what time it is, we'll either do an entire round of the mantra or we'll do 21 or something like that. But it's an easy mantra to learn because it's very repetitious. And as Dana was mentioning, there's a word there, the B-H-E-K-A-N-D-Z-E. We pronounce it here Bekense. We put the accent on the first syllable, Bekense. If you go to other centers, they're going to say Bekense. They're going to put the accent on the middle syllable. When I was listening to Dr. Thurman recite this, I couldn't understand what he was saying at all. Because it was like a totally, I got the tayata om, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, rajasamagati soha. I did not know how he was pronouncing it at all. So there are lots of different pronunciations. Here we go bekense, bekense, maha bekense, bekense. Huh? Yeah, I mean, if... Huh? Okay, yeah. Really? Okay, I'll tell you what. When we do it out loud 3 times, we'll do bacon. I'll do bacon. Say you do whatever you want. Because mostly we're going to do it silently anyway. So whatever works for you. Okay. Yeah. The other thing that you'll see in some places it's different is here it says dayata, tayata, om, bekanze, bekanze, or bekanze, bekanze, maha, bekanze. Usually, or sometimes, there's 2 bekanzes there. Here, there is not. But you'll see it both ways. Doesn't matter a whit, however you say it. So, let's just, I'm going to say it a few times. And let's just say it together so you can get it. It's Tayata Om Bekense Bekense Maha Bekense Raja Samugate Soha Tayata Om Bekense Bekense Maha Bekense Raja Samagate Soha Tayata Om Bekense Bekense Maha Bekense Raja Samagate Soha. Okay. All right. So page 1. And I'm going to turn this off because you don't need to... Oh, you want me to leave it on? Huh?
I did it.
Oh, good. Yes.
Do you want me to keep it on? Okay. All right.
Push it away from you.
Huh? You
can push it away from you a little bit, just as long as it runs.
Okay. Yeah, because you don't need to hear me, but they're recording, so. Okay. Above the crown, and we cite all this together. Above the crown of your head, upon a lotus and moon disc, is the medicine Buddha.
His body is blue in color, and blue light radiates from him in all directions. His right hand, in the gesture of granting sublime realizations, rests on his right knee and holds the stem of an aurora plant between his thumb and index finger. His left hand, in the gesture of concentration, holds a lapis lazuli bowl filled with a medicinal nectar. He is seated in the vajra posture, wearing the three saffron robes of a monk, and has the signs and marks of a Buddha. You'll see Sanskrit a couple places in here. We're not going to do the Sanskrit. We'll just do the English. I take refuge until I am enlightened in the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. Through the merit I create by practicing giving and the other perfections, may I attain Buddhahood for the sake of all sentient beings. Reverently, I prostrate with my body, speech, and mind to Guru, Medicine Buddha, and present clouds of every type of offering, actual and mentally transformed. I confess all my negative actions accumulated since beginningless time and rejoice in the virtues of all holy and ordinary beings. Please remain until cyclic existence ends. Turn the wheel of Dharma for sentient beings. I dedicate all the virtues of myself and others to the great enlightenment. I request you, Bhagavan, Master of Healing, whose sky-colored holy body of lapis lazuli signifies omniscient wisdom and compassion, as vast as limitless space, please inspire my mind. I request you, compassionate Master of Healing, who holds in your right hand the King of Medicines, symbolizing your vow to help all sentient beings plagued by the 424 diseases. Please inspire my mind. I request you, compassionate Master of Healing, who holds in your left hand a bowl of nectar, symbolizing your vow to give the glorious, undying nectar of Dharma to eliminate the degeneration of sickness, fear, stress, depression, grief, old age, and death. Please inspire my mind. I prostrate, go for refuge, and make offerings, fully realize, destroyer of all defilements, completely perfected enlightened being, who has realized the ultimate nature of all phenomena, Medicine Buddha, King of Lapis Light. May your vow to benefit all sentient beings now ripen for myself and others. And then we're going to go to the visualization under healing for yourself. Visualization and mantra recitation. In response to your request, infinite blue rays of light stream down from the heart and body of the King of Medicine. The light completely fills your body from head to toe, purifying all diseases. If you have any pain or any specific illnesses, focus the blue light directly to this spot and visualize the pain, in a way, the pain and disease. All ailments due to interfering forces and the negative karma and mental obscuration cause these, as well as anxiety, fear, and negative emotions, are also purified. These leave you in the form of a dirty liquid, which then completely disappears. Your body becomes the nature of light, clean and clear like a crystal. Light from the Medicine Buddha again fills your body, bringing with it the realizations of the past and all the good qualities of the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. Your mind is transformed into love, compassion, and wisdom. While doing the visualization, recite the mantra as much as possible. Okay, and we'll do 21. We'll do the first three out loud and then the rest to yourself. Tayata om bacon say maha bacon say rajasama gate soa. Tayata om bacon say maha bacon say rajasama gate soa. Tayata om bacon say mahara samagate soha. Tayata Om Bekinse Bekinse Maha Bekinse Raja. After reciting the mantra, Medicine Buddha melts into light and absorbs into your heart. Your mind becomes non-dual with the Buddha's Dharmakaya mind. And then healing for others. And again, we're going to do the mantra 21 times. Visualize the Medicine Buddha on the crown of each living being. You may think specifically of those who are suffering and in need of healing. Do the visualization with the light first purifying their diseases and their causes, and then bringing them the realization of the path to enlightenment. Recite the mantra, Tayata Om Bekinse Bekinse Maha Bekinse Rajasama Gate Soha. Tayata Om Bekinse Bekinse Maha Bekinse Rajasama Gate Soha. Tayata Om Bekinse Bekinse Maha Bekinse Rajasama Gate. Tayata Om Bekinse Bekinse Maha Bekinse Rajasama Gate Soha. And after this absorption, we're going to do about a 6-minute set. Absorption. Imagine the Medicine Buddha on the crown of each sentient being's head, melting into light and absorbing in their hearts, bringing infinite peace, compassion, and wisdom.
And no deep closing prayers. May the supreme jewel of bodhicitta that has not arisen arise and grow, and may that which has arisen not diminish but increase more and more. May I quickly attain the state of medicine Buddha and lead every being without exception into that pure world, just like the guru medicine Buddha, who guides all sentient beings with compassion as infinite as space. May I also become a compassionate guide of sentient beings who exist in all directions of the universe. Okay, is this on? Yeah, it's still on. Okay, thanks everybody for coming. If you want Medicine Buddha blessed sand, please come see Patty and Michelle up here, and then go in the back and get coffee and tea, and maybe they'll just continue filling it if you want more. And I guess, oh, the booklet, yeah. If you think that you'll use this as part of your practice, you are absolutely welcome to take it, and please, you know, a small donation would be nice. If you're not going to use it as part of your practice and it's just going to be part of your collection of collecting dust, please don't take it and leave it on your chair or put it on the back table. So, okay. And make a donation anyway. Okay, all right. Thank you all very much.